Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go hook him up!
I would attack you until I wear your Texas ass out.
The game is ours to play.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am host Ed in San Antonio, and I'm joined by my co-host Craig. What's going on, Craig?
Greetings and salutations, Edward. How are you?
I'm doing very well. And by some miracle, our other co-host is on time tonight. So what's going on, Contreras?
Not too much. What's going on?
Not too much. Just trying to do the show. For some reason, my headset's very low, so I can barely hear you guys, but hopefully we'll be all right. How did you guys enjoy the Warrior documentary on the network? Because I saw it this morning, and all I can say is, wow.
That was maybe the best piece of work they've ever done.
I haven't got a chance to watch it yet. It was on my to-do list today, and then my honey-do list trumped my to-do list.
Way to screw up the show, Craig. But,
you didn't tell me to watch
it. It's funny because I was thinking just the other day or earlier this week when I watched the Daniel Bryan documentary, I'm thinking to myself, this is like one of the greatest things they've ever done. And they freaking topped that, and they did it within, like, what, less than a week? I mean, maybe slightly over a week, but I mean, it's just like, it's amazing how good of a job they did on that thing. It was awesome.
For a 1-hour documentary, I mean, you're not going to find any better.
And just the footage that they had on it, I mean, it was almost like kind of like wrestling with shadows. It's like amazing what they caught. You know, you have freaking Warrior and Hogan making peace. You have the stuff with him and Vince, the stuff with him and Hunter. It's like, it's just amazing. You know, it's just like, as weird as it sounds, it's like everything was meant to be as far as everything that happened. I mean, it's sad that he died and everything, but it's like, to me, it seems like it's just how everything was supposed to be.
Yeah, it was like wild seeing, like, they had footage of Hogan in a deposition when Warrior was suing him. I mean, that was crazy.
Yeah, It gives me high hopes for other stuff that they can do. You know what I mean? When other people pass on, they can come out and make something. And, you know, instead of just that little tribute they do at the beginning of the Raw, they could easily do, you know, tributes like this for so many people because they got so much footage. You know, it's like, I have high hopes to watch the
WrestleMania Fallout on Undertaker and Brock Lesnar, just for Paul Heyman at the press conference afterwards. Such an amazing dig.
I haven't seen that yet. I guess I'll check that out.
Yeah, that was pretty good. They had it felt like a sports press conference afterward, and he was just so amazing, being an asshole. He's great.
Even better than he's been on the last couple of Raws.
Yeah, he was even better here.
Oh, shit, definitely got to see that. That'll be awesome.
They also got a new Legends Roundtable tonight on the Ultimate Warrior, so I'm going to check that out later.
Oh, yeah, that'll probably be good, too.
Yeah.
Anyway, tonight we're going to be joined by a very good friend of the show, and for some reason he actually listens to the show, and that is Dave Prazak, former announcer for Ring of Honor, promoter, and the man behind Shimmer Wrestling, and he's been involved in wrestling for a long, long time. I think he started with Ian Rotten and stuff, so, you know, we should have plenty to talk about. He's a real cool dude. I'm actually going to start to try and call him right now, so I'm going to have to let you guys handle the show here for a second while I call him.
Show. Now, did you see the Daniel Bryan doc there?
Oh yeah,
sure.
Yeah, that was great. That was great though.
Very good. They are.
They get something with these original network shows. They're all. I'm loving them.
Yeah, they're putting some quality stuff on that network. I'm not regretting spending $10 a month.
Kind of knew I wouldn't though. Of Sting on WWE TV this week, twice.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the Warrior documentary, and he was like one of the talking heads when they did, like, they replayed some of the stuff from the Ultimate Warrior DVD, like the new one they just put out.
Okay.
They put in comments from guys that they recorded after he died, and he was on there, so that was funny.
Oh.
That's great.
Yeah,
could you introduce our guest, please?
I would be more than happy to, Ed. Our guest tonight has been involved with the indies in professional wrestling since 1996, or so Wikipedia tells me. From managing to booking, or even in the commentary booth, this man has done it all. Just might be the smartest man in wrestling, as he's surrounded himself with beautiful women from all over the world. Please welcome to the show, from Shimmer Wrestling, Dave Prazak.
I guess if I've been doing independent wrestling for, whatever, 18 years, I'm not the smartest person in the world, am I? Right? If I'm not making it, that means I'm not making any money for 18 years, right? Man. So how are you guys doing?
How's it going, Dave? I'm sure you're feeling much better than you did the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, we did a couple of shows. We did the, you know, Mania weekend in New Orleans, and then last weekend was really busy because we did 4 shows in Chicago. So I'm still in the recovery stage. But at least I don't have to worry about running any shows anytime soon. So,
would you call that past week the busiest week of the year for you, or is there other weeks that are? Because I know you do so much
like
stuff.
Like the busiest, like 10 days or whatever. Because I mean, it was New Orleans, and I mean it was 2 consecutive weekends of shows, and the Berwyn stuff is busy enough as it is, just because it's. We do have to plan 4 shows, and, you know, it's 8 hours of taping stuff per day on 2 consecutive days. And there's also, like, there's a local indie that runs monthly shows at the same venue that does Friday night, and we have some girls on that show, too. So there's also the Friday night that we have to worry about. And I did drive from Chicago to New Orleans and then back.
Ooh.
Before doing the shows. So lots of travel in addition to lots of shows. So it was busy, but at least we're going to get – we have 5 new DVD releases we're going to get out of it, and we did the iPay-per-view. So.
Cool.
Now you guys don't do a lot of iPay-per-views. I think this was the second one. I've actually bought the VOD, but I haven't seen it all. I've only seen the first couple matches so far.
You weren't there, so you don't need to have seen the iPay-per-view.
Well, I wanted to hear if I got name dropped, so I haven't been name dropped so far.
Well, I hate to spoil it, but I don't think it happened. I don't recall it happening.
Oh. Not sure how you can miss me.
Our commentary position was like over on, it was like past the general admission seating in the auditorium, so like it was difficult for us to even see what was going on in the ring, much less who was sitting on the stage.
Now, how do you feel that everything went? I mean, as far as the broadcast, the show, I mean, basically everything.
Well, my main complaint, as I'm finishing up my dinner here, my main complaint with New Orleans was we had to start late because the Athletic Commission still regulates wrestling in the state of Louisiana, and they wouldn't let the show start if we didn't have the paramedics and the ambulance on hand, and the ambulance was late. And the reason the ambulance was late was no one could find the venue. Because, and I don't know if you were, if you experienced this at all trying to get there, but, like, every street around Tulane University is a one-way street, half of which were, like, blocked off because at the very same time our show was taking place, there was some sort of festival going on where they, like, literally blocked off all the streets leading to the venue, and there's no, like, public parking lot. So you either had to hope that you weren't going to get ticketed or towed and park in, like, student permit parking only areas, or you had to park really far away and walk. Either way, like, the ambulance probably couldn't find the venue, and that's why they were 20 minutes late. But because we had to start 20 minutes late, that meant that everything on the show got delayed 20 minutes. And in hindsight, I should have realized at the time that we needed to cut the match time on some of the undercard matches so that the main event would be going to the ring about 20 minutes sooner than it did. Because obviously our show was a 3 o'clock bell time, and so the target was to have the show over by 6 so that people who had tickets to the Hall of Fame could, you know, get across town and go to the Hall of Fame. You know, the Hall of Fame started at 8, I believe. So, I mean, 2 hours' time is perfectly fine, but, like, once I realized, all right, it's 6:25, and they're still in the first fall of a 2 out of 3 falls match that has an advertised 90-minute time limit, so people might be thinking, okay, they're going to go 90 minutes. There were people, I only noticed it out of the GA people. Like, I didn't see anyone on the stage necessarily leaving, but there were people leaving during the main event thinking that, all right, if I stay for this whole presumably 90-minute match, I'm going to miss the beginning of the Hall of Fame. So, you know, some people were leaving early, and I wish that if I could go back in time and shave some time on the undercard, I would have, just to make sure that anyone who bought a ticket got to see the whole show and still had enough time to get across town to make it to the Hall of Fame. So,
that was my main complaint
about the show. We could have timed it out better.
Well, I, as someone who was there and who was going to the Hall of Fame, I made it there with plenty of time, so, you know, no worries on my part. I highly enjoyed the show. I'm glad nothing got cut.
But, you know, as a promoter, I don't want to worry fans that, like, all right, are they going to go, because if they did go 90 minutes, then you probably would have been late for the Hall of Fame. Like, what we should have done is not even announce a time limit and just say, all right, we're doing a 2 out of 3 falls match. Then nobody would have thought, well, this thing's not going to be over until 7:15 or 7:30 or whatever. But live and learn, right? Never make that mistake again.
Now, before the weekend, I heard you on another podcast, and you had mentioned that you were a little concerned because I think you only had 200 pre-sold tickets. I was on the stage. But it looked like it turned out to be a decent crowd. How was the walk-up for the show? Did it turn out all right, or were you happy with it?
I mean, it was fine. Like, after iPay-per-view, you know, it's a profitable show. But obviously you want as many human beings in the building as possible to give good reactions to the matches so that you have a live atmosphere. There's nothing worse than, like, even if you have incredible wrestling on a show that's in front of a small crowd, you know, it's not going to have that emotion that you get out of a big crowd. So you want as many people in there as possible. So obviously I would have liked there to be a big crowd, you know, like last year in New Jersey, we had 700 people. This year we had 250 or whatever the hell it was. I mean, it might've been a little bit more than that. I still have to go over everything with the WWN people about the final attendance, but it was probably in the neighborhood of 250 to 275 ish. But, you know, I would have loved to have that be 400, you know, 400 people, 500 people or whatever. But, oh well, there's a world of difference between running indie wrestling in the New York, New Jersey market where there's, like, a big indie fan following and lots of promotions and running in fuck-ass Louisiana.
Yeah. Well, I also think part of it's because of the split, because last year you had the shows in conjunction with WrestleCon.
Yeah, yeah.
And this year you didn't. So, like, last year you had people who were in the building. They, you know, they might not have even planned to go to the Shimmer or Chikara, but they were in the building, and then, you know, I'm sure there was, like, a lot of people that, you know, followed the crowd.
Yeah,
you know?
especially when the shows are happening in a city that doesn't have a huge indie wrestling following, you can't afford to split the audience like that. But that was I mean, I wasn't a part of the decision-making in that thing. It was just sort of, you know, I was a part of the – I was invited to be a part of the WWM Live thing, and they made the – I mean, it came down to like a financial decision about which venue each group wanted to rent and how much the rent was going to be on that venue and if they felt it was worthwhile. And, like, from what I understand, the High Spots people and the WWM Live people couldn't agree on which venue to rent and couldn't agree on whether the rent being charged by each venue was worthwhile, and so they had to split the audience that way. Hopefully, I mean, they still do work together in some form. You know, High Spots carries the Shimmer DVDs and the WWN Live, you know, the Dragon Gate and Evolve and all, and the Shine DVDs. So, like, there's still, there's no big animosity between High Spots and Sal and all of them. But so hopefully in the future, during Mania weekends, they can agree on the same venue and we don't have to split the audience like that.
Yeah, I hope
not,
because like the last 2 years, it's been a really great experience. I mean,
and I don't know exactly what I've heard all the talk about how the city that Mania is in next year in California is trying to, or WWE is trying to block indie promotions from renting venues, apparently, like any city-owned venues or whatever. But, and I don't know the specifics, but from what I'm told, they already have a venue rented that just doesn't happen to be owned by the city. So, like, no matter how hard they try, all you got to do if you're an independent promoter and you want to run a show is find somewhere with a high enough ceiling that you can put up a wrestling ring, guys can stand on the top rope and do a few things, and you can fit, you know, 400 chairs around the ring, and you're good. So that's probably what's going to wind up happening in California next year.
Well, that's good to hear. But as far as the matches, how do you feel like all the matches went? I didn't think there was one bad match on the card, and I thought, what I like about Shimmer and also Shine is every match builds. It's like sometimes you go to an ROH show and the first match will be like totally crazy, you know, and it's hard to keep it going like the whole time. But it seems like the way I don't know if you're the one that's actually booking every single match, but I just love the way it builds and flows, and just every match becomes more important, and you know, as it goes along.
Yeah, we try our best. I've got a lot of good helping hands involved in the whole process, both in New Orleans and in Berwyn. It's not just me. Like Lexi Fife, Stefan Brier from Femme Fatale in Montreal, Kevin Harvey, Allison Danger, Portia Perez are all. It's a team effort to put these shows together, and we try to pace each show properly so that the opener doesn't overshadow like the main matches later on in the show, because obviously you don't want to burn out the crowd. And you know, that's not to say that we tell everybody in the opening match don't do a bunch of cool shit, because we want them to get over and everything. But you know, we just make sure that the goal of each match fits in the right place in an overall card, so that you do build to the main event, so that it's not like, you know, the fans are tired by the time they get to the main event. And hopefully that didn't happen. We try not to do that. But the New Orleans show, match-wise, I mean, I was happy with how it all turned out. And it seems like from what I've seen online and stuff like that, that the fans were pretty happy with the matches that they got. The only thing is it was a very different show for those fans who might be following our DVD series closely, because there were a lot of debuts that we haven't featured previously on our DVDs in Berwyn. I think we had like 5 debuts on one show. So I'm hoping that like for the WrestleMania crowd and the vast majority of the people that were in the building, I'd say probably 85% to 90% of the people in the building in New Orleans were just people who came for Mania weekend and they wanted to see the Shimmer show in addition to all the other events that they were going to go to during the course of the weekend. So for that crowd, as long as you just give them good matches, they're going to be happy with it. The question is whether any of the diehard, like, Shimmer DVD-buying fans felt that it was a weird show because we had so many unusual wrestlers on there that aren't normally on our shows. But, I mean, I guess you really can't complain if you get good wrestling, even if it's out of people that you're not familiar with. So I was pretty happy with how everything turned out. Candice LeRae from PWG, she was one of the debuts, and she had an awesome match with Athena. So she earned a future spot on, like, pretty much all of our shows that she's available for with that match. Kaylee Ray from Scotland, she wrestled Vanessa Craven, and she had a really good match too, and she was on the Berwyn shows. Craven, you know, did really well in her role as well. Pretty much everybody. Ivelisse, that was her first Shimmer show. She's the Shine champion right now, and we needed to fill a spot at the last minute, and she was there. So, you know, I'm very thankful that she stepped into that role, even though she had, like, three other matches during the course of the weekend to worry about. But, you know, she was willing to wrestle a fourth and had a really good match with Kimberly. So, overall, I liked how everything turned out. I just would have paced the show differently so that the main event was in the ring earlier than it was.
Yeah, it was the first time I'd ever heard of the Craven and the redhead. I'm sorry, what was her name again?
Kaylee Ray. She's from Ray. Glasgow.
One yeah, of they, two I don't know who they Glasgow. Were, but they did have a really good little match. And Candice was phenomenal. I had heard so much about her. I hadn't seen her at all. And, yeah, her and Athena tore it up.
Yeah, pretty much everybody. Like, it's no secret, PWG is one of the most popular independent companies right now. And she is the girl there. And more often than not, you see her wrestling against guys just because they don't, you know, they're not importing a bunch of women to wrestle Candice. So, I mean, a real question, even in my mind, I mean, I had been familiar with her, semi-familiar with her over the years of just being an independent female wrestler. But the question was, all right, we know that she can do cool spots with guys, but what happens when you put her in the ring with other girls? And we got our answer. She tore it up with Athena, and, you know, It's one of those cool times, like being an independent wrestling promoter, where like you give someone an opportunity who's been looking for it, and they like produce such an awesome match in the ring that like the crowd, through their ovation at the end of the match, dictates that yes, you need to bring this person back. They earned their spot, and the crowd showed their appreciation for it. So Candice LeRae is now, you know, an official part of the Shimmer roster going forward, and she's going to be on the AAW show coming up in 2 weeks. We're running Bourbon Street, not New Orleans Bourbon Street, but a bar called Bourbon Street in suburban Chicago on May 2nd, and she's going to be on that show. So.
Cool. Now you mentioned Ivelisse a minute ago. Is there any more plans to bring her in? Because I've been watching the Shine pay-per-views, and like the last three, she's been in like the best matches. I think she's like, right now, she's like the hottest as far as,
yeah,
having the best matches of all the women. I mean,
yeah, definitely. Like after the show was over with, as they were getting ready for the Dragon Gate show, where she wrestled Mercedes Martinez about 2.5 hours later. You know, I thanked her for doing it, and she was like, I'd like to do any Shimmer stuff coming up. And I was like, I know it's probably not, it's way too last minute, but like, if you want to do next weekend, we got some shows in Chicago. And it was, I mean, nobody's going to be available, you know, on 7 days' notice. So she wasn't able to come to Chicago, but definitely, like, she's very good. And, like, she was someone who, like, when she first moved, she moved to Chicago from Puerto Rico. It was her and her boyfriend at the time. And he was also an independent wrestler. And they were just trying to get on shows in Chicago. And she'd show up at Shimmer just trying to get a spot. And, you know, I guess you could just say wrestling politics. Sometimes you don't get opportunities because sometimes you rub people the wrong way, and unfortunately that happened, and I'm sure it wasn't intentional on her part, but she got herself some heat like 4 years ago and never ended up doing the shows. But, I mean, the opportunity was given to her at Shine to be a featured performer on all of their shows, and she worked her way into a position where she's headlining the shows now and having really good matches. So, you know, it would be foolish on our part to not include her on the Shimmer stuff going forward as well.
Since you did it kind of last minute, you also had another person that was supposed to make their Shimmer debut, and for some reason she canceled. What exactly happened with Bobby Harden?
I don't know. All I know is that the day before the show, when she was supposed to fly in, essentially she was booked for the Mid-South Legends reunion show, which was, I think, like a half hour away from our thing. But she was going to work, I think, Angelina Love on that show, on Friday night. And it just so happened that her return flight wasn't until like 5 p.m. on Saturday. So I'm like, well, if you want to do our show, and if you want, I'll put you in the opening match on our show, work that show, head straight to the airport, and boom, you just work. You got two bookings out of the weekend. And she said, okay, I'll do it. And I don't know the details, but she missed her flight on Friday, didn't work the Mid-South Legends show, and didn't work our show. So I read something about how somehow the gates were closed, like security gates were closed for a certain period of time. And like it was probably right down to the wire and she couldn't get through security. So whatever, shit happens. I've missed my share of flights as well in the past.
Yeah. So. I was actually kind of disappointed because she's from Texas, so I've kind of followed her a little bit for like the past few years. And I've seen she's just gotten so much better as far as in the ring and then as far as like, you know, she was always a pretty girl, but now she's, like, real jacked and chiseled out.
Yeah,
I mean, she's,
yeah.
like, you know, it's kind of disappointing. It's kind of, I guess, kind of bad on her because she did miss probably what has been the biggest weekend of her career so far.
I mean, maybe. I mean, who knows? Who knows how it would have gone? She's the NWA Women's Champion right now, so she's getting a lot of work representing the NWA for what that's worth these days. yeah, like, the two main women that we had not put on any of the Shimmer shows yet were Candace and Barbie Hayden, I would say. So it was a good opportunity to put both of them on the same show. And like, I mean, originally my offer was, you know, if you want to drive in, because it's close enough to drive. I mean, it's still like a 7 or 8 hour drive, but close enough to drive if you're an indie wrestler that's used to road trips. But then, you know, the Mid-South people were going to fly her in. So I'm like, all right, then let's do it. And whatever. Shit happens, and we worked around it, and that opened up an opportunity for Ivelisse to be on the show. So, and then Ivelisse had a great match. That's probably going to lead to her getting booked in Berwyn now. So,
that's cool. That's cool. I like I said, I did watch the first couple matches on the VOD, and I do have somewhat of a bone to pick with you. We always make fun of Brian for being inside a bubble, but how did you not know that Leather Bates was Gambit from the X-Men?
I don't pay attention to any pop culture or anything. Like, I watch very few movies. I've never read a comic book in my life. I don't play video games. So, like, all of Leva's characters are, like, over my head. I have no idea. And what makes it worse is, like, usually my color commentator is Portia Perez, who equally watches nothing. And, like, she knows wrestling references but nothing else, kind of like me. So, like, we'll have notes about what Leva is for this particular match, and we will acknowledge what she is. And then she'll ask me, so what does that character mean? What did they do? And I'll be like, I don't know. You have no idea? She's like, no, I don't watch anything. And then we just agree that, like, yeah, we suck. So whatever. As long as the people watching the match understand her characters, that's all that matters.
There you go.
I marked out. I mean, she had an awesome Gambit costume. I mean, she looked exactly like from the cartoon and the video game.
And she, this past weekend in Berwyn, she was Pee Wee Herman. I understood that one at least.
Yeah, she was the first show. I think she was Rogue from the X-Men. And then she was my girlfriend of the one she was the week before.
Wow.
Then she was Deadpool, and then. I know she was Pee Wee Herman the last night, so.
Right. So the word of the day was three. So needless to say, for at least the first five matches, anytime the referee would reach the number three on, like, either, you know, breaking on the ropes in the corner or whatever, or near falls, one, two, three, everybody in the building was fucking doing it. I was hoping it would last through the main event of that DVD, but I guess people got tired of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I definitely got to get that one. Check it out.
Lots of I know you are, but what am I type stuff, and yeah.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, now, I'll let Craig be kind of quiet. Craig, go ahead and ask the question.
Kind of being quiet. I can't get a word in edgewise with you.
Yeah.
So, I am not a huge women's wrestling fan.
Neither am I these days. getting sick of this shit. So, but anyway, go on.
So what I've done is I've done my journalistic best and gone to a great friend of mine. His name's Charles Short. I don't know if you've met the man, but he flies here from Seattle to go to your shows often.
He told me about how he knew you and Brian from years ago. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I went to high school with this kid. So Charles is, he hates everything but women's wrestling. So he sent me, I asked him for some questions, and he loaded up. So,
and he's a big Japanese women's wrestling fan, too, so you're probably going to mispronounce every name that he gave you.
Yes. Is the women's promotion in Japan, is it Yoshi or Joshi, or how does that go?
Joshi is the Joshi. It's kind of the term for women's wrestling. It's not a promotion itself. It's just kind of like Lucha Libre is wrestling in Mexico. Joshi is Japanese women's wrestling.
Okay. So, first question. Do you have any injury updates on Madison Eagle, Christina Von Erie, or Pegaboo?
Well, I'll start with Pegaboo. That is Lufisto's doll / inanimate managerial object.
That poor dog got his ass kicked in New Orleans, too.
Yes. Saraya Knight basically destroyed Pegaboo, ripping all of its limbs and head off from its body during the course of a Lufisto match this past weekend, and led to them having a match on the next show. But from what I understand, Pegaboo went through reconstructive surgery and is going to be okay. Let's see. Madison Eagles, she was coming into the weekend with a screwed-up ankle. I don't know exactly what the extent of it was, but she was going to wrestle on all four shows in Berwyn anyway. She's just going to fight through it. And then during her first of the four matches, she broke her wrist.
Ooh.
But she still wrestled her second match with a broken wrist and a screwed up ankle.
That a girl.
And then at the end of that night, they probably thought maybe it would be best to go to the hospital and have your body parts x-rayed. And she does have a broken wrist, and so she had to solely be a manager on the second day. But broken wrist definitely for Madison, and I think that puts her out of the Shine Show tonight in Florida. Maybe she could do commentary or something, I don't know. So, don't know about that. Don't know how bad her ankle is. I think the wrist is the main thing right now she's dealing with. And Christina Von Erie got dumped on her head with Nikki Storm's finisher. It's kind of like Chris Sabin's cradle shock, but it was right on her head. But she'll be fine. It rang her bell temporarily and took some time for her to, you know, get back to her feet and everything, but she should be fine.
Okay.
Nikki Storm, I got to say, is the new greatest promo ever.
Dude, she's awesome. She's never allowed to have a match where she doesn't grab the microphone beforehand. I told her that. So she's got a really thick Scottish accent and tons of charisma for anybody that hasn't seen her. So, like, she's definitely someone who has that kind of, like, she has that it factor that, like, you know that she's eventually going to be doing something on television. It's just a question of how long until the right person realizes that.
Okay. A follow-up. Is there any American or international talent that you would love to bring in but you haven't been able to yet?
Manami Toyota.
Yeah, I mean, it would be great to eventually have her do something, but at the same time, Chikara brought her in multiple times already. So... Mm-hmm. I mean, she's great. I'd love to have her on the show if it makes sense, like if she's in the middle of already being here and, you know, we could split the travel or whatever. But, like, as far as, like, Manami Toyota goes in the United States, like, the people who wanted the opportunity to see her live that live in the United States had that chance on about five different occasions on assorted Chikara shows over the past 3 or 4 years. So... I'm almost like, and because Chikara did the Joshi Mania shows in, it was like New York, Boston, and Philadelphia, maybe 2 years ago, might have been 3 years ago, where they brought in all of like the mid-90s All Japan women, like the people that you would know about, like Aja Kong was on it, Manami Toyota, Mayumi Ozaki, you know, like all the stars of... Basically, when Quackenbush was watching tapes of women's wrestling in the mid-90s, he brought them all in to do that show. Whereas on the Shimmer stuff, we've been trying to bring in more of like the current generation, like the wrestlers between the ages of 21 and 32-ish, because that's what people want to see. It's like you're going to have, if you book like the top 25-year-old talent in Japan right now and put them against like the top current generation Americans, you're going to get much better matches generally than if you were to book a veteran, you know, someone who's in their either very late 30s or early 40s, who like physically can't, I mean, even if they want to, no matter how hard they try, the fact is they're at the tail end of their career. So I'd rather be the one to feature current generation, like the younger talent. And there's a lot of people that I would like to bring in. Io Shirai would be one. She does like standing shooting star presses and stuff, very athletic. So she's probably at the top of my list right now for Japanese women that we haven't brought in yet. And I don't know about, like, Americans. I don't know. I'd have to think about it because, like, the list had been, like, Candice and Barbie Hayden. I don't know. I guess Io Shirai is my only answer right now.
Now, you mentioned about featuring younger talent. One of my questions was going to be that it seems like there's like a new guard coming in as far as the women's wrestling. Like Roxy has retired, Reigns retired, Selva Del Rey, I don't know if she's retired, but she's, you know, the trainer at WWE. But
she's actually making a living in the wrestling business now.
Yeah.
Unlike when she was an independent professional. Well, actually, she was paying the bills then because she was – people were willing to pay her well, but you know what I mean. Like, she did all that she could on the indie level, and she's making WWE money now, only having to travel, you know, 5 minutes from home to the train to the performance center and teaching people. So, but yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah, like everybody. I mean, we've been doing the Shimmer thing for almost 9 years, and that is a couple of years into the careers of people like Daisy Hayes, Lacey, who are, you know, both of them are retired too. Mischief, you know, who isn't retired yet, but her knees have seen better days. You know, she's got these two, the times that she has been able to wrestle in the past year or so, she's got these two big Steve Austin looking knee braces because, you know, so much damage over the years from her wrestling career. So, you know, it's, the year, I mean, it adds up for any pro wrestler, male or female. If you're doing this kind of thing to your body, which is a very unnatural thing to be doing to the human body for, and if you're doing it for like anywhere between 13 and 15 years, your body's going to break down at some point, and you're going to be like, why am I still doing this? Like, you keep doing it if there's some sort of hope that maybe you're going to get a job with, you know, WWE or something, and like, well, if I just tough it out for another 2 years, I'm going to get a job and make some real money, and then I can retire. But then again, you look at WWE, and like, they don't want to hire anybody who's past a certain age because they'd rather invest their time and money in someone who's really young. Can't blame them for that. You know, they're running a business, but yeah, there's. So, I mean, essentially, it's the same story for any wrestling promotion and any time frame. Like, you can't have the stars that were stars 15 years ago continue to be headlining because you got to make room for the younger talent. And so, I mean, we're seeing that with the women's wrestling scene just like we're seeing it everywhere else, or at least I hope we're going to start seeing it everywhere else.
Is there any one or two girls that you feel that are going to, like, you know, become as good as, say, Trinidad Melissa, Cerro Del Rey? Like,
yeah.
Top of my head, I would say Mia Yam. I think she's, like, improved so much and has a long way to go even.
Definitely. Before I speak on that, I was just saying I hope that we start seeing across the wrestling scene the veterans kind of step aside to make room, especially like WWE. Like, they have, between the guys who are on TV now and the guys who are in developmental waiting to be brought up to TV, if they featured a roster of nothing but guys from the ages of like 32 or 22 to like 34 or whatever, they've got talent there to like have kick-ass in-ring shows.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still seeing fucking Kane and the Big Show And, mm-hmm. you know, why are they occupying spots while, you know, Sami Zayn is still in developmental? Like, it's time to like, I mean, do you think a single person is going to stop buying tickets if suddenly Big Show wasn't wrestling? It doesn't matter. Like, that spot should be right. given to somebody who's young, who's athletic, who has the, you know. They could turn WWE into they've got the talent there. They just need to make the concerted effort to feature the young talent and to slowly. I mean, it's been a process. We were hoping 10 years ago they were going to start phasing some of these guys out, but that's what they got to do. But anyway, yeah, there are a lot of girls, young girls who are either approaching the level of some of those vets, like, you know, Del Rey, Mercedes. Mercedes is going to be taking a hiatus from wrestling, not necessarily retirement, but, like, she's been doing it for 14 years, and her body's really breaking down. I know you went to Hall of Fame after the Shimmer show, but when she had that match with Eva Lisa at Dragon Gate that was head-to-head with Hall of Fame, like, Mercedes, her back went out during that match. It's just like she's had to have surgery on her shoulder. You know, it's just physically it's taking its toll. So it's time for the younger girls to, you know, step up, and Athena is definitely one of them. You know, she's in many ways she's still rough around the edges, but she's super athletic. You know, great agility, flying ability, the O face, etc. So just given a little bit more experience, and, you know, just knowing how to structure matches better, she's going to be, you know, really good. Give her another 2 years. And she's going to be at the top of her game. Mia Yim is probably at the top of the list, which sucks because, I mean, it sucks that for that New Orleans show, because she got hurt in the afternoon. Or no, it was the night before. Never mind.
Yeah, she got hurt at the Odyssey show.
Yeah, the night before. She screwed up her knee and couldn't even extend her leg completely on Saturday. So she had to sit that show out. But she worked Berwyn this past weekend, and did four matches, and, like, even though she's probably at, like, 70% on that knee, she had probably, like, if I was going to rank match quality, like, the top 10, she probably had three of the top, like, five or six matches of the weekend, even on a horrible knee. So, like, even injured, she's having, like, unbelievable matches. So she's definitely someone who, like, we built her up on the first day with wins over Mercedes Martinez and Hikaru Shida, and then she got a title shot against Melissa on Sunday, and, you know, obviously it made sense, so they structured all three of the matches around her opponent working the knee, but, I mean, tore it up. Like, her and Shida on the first day is one of the best matches we've ever had on a show. So definitely Mia Yim, Athena, Shida. I mean, you can only go so far, I guess, in American wrestling when you don't. I mean, she speaks some English, but not quite as well to probably ever get a job here. But she's awesome. She's like 25 years old, was like the star of the Ice Ribbon promotion, which she left like 8 months ago or something like that. She's freelance now. But Shida's awesome. I'm going to have her on every show that I run from now until the end of Shimmer. You know, there's a lot of young girls, and there's a lot of, like, probably young talent who aren't quite there yet, but you can tell that, like, given a little bit more seasoning, they're going to get there. So, I mean, the future definitely looks, the next few years definitely looks very bright for the overall women's wrestling scene. So,
Gabe was able to bring in bad influence for the Dragon Gate shows in New Orleans. What does it take to get, let's say you were bringing in Angelina Love, what is the negotiation process with TNA to do so?
Well, we did that for a while, and we're not doing that anymore. the rules kind of changed over the years in respect to what it takes to book TNA talent and what you can actually do with them. Like, back in the day, like, I hate using the term back in the day for something that was only like 6 years ago. That's one of my pet peeves. But back then, back in like 2008-ish, like, you could, you know, they were a quote-unquote national promotion, but they still were allowing, they realized they're not giving all of their talent enough work to justify saying you can't work indies. So they let them work indies, but you had to go through the office to book them, and the only condition was their matches couldn't be released on DVD in retail. Like, we only released a handful of stuff in retail through Big Vision Entertainment, like, several years ago. But, like, other than that, like, as long as your DVDs were being sold by the this promotion on that promotion's website, and it's not, like, available on Amazon.com or whatever, you could you could book them and you could put them on the DVD. The rules changed maybe 2 years ago, might have been 3 years ago, to where you couldn't even put them on a DVD. And certainly couldn't put them on an iPay-per-view. Like, you can still book TNA talent if you want to spend the money on them, and if you're going to draw a big enough crowd at the door that the ticket money is going to cover the expense, but you can't put them on iPay-per-view, you can't put them on the DVD. And that just doesn't make sense for our business model, which is like, with Shimmer, half of the expenses of the weekend are covered by the gate. The other half we have to make back on DVD. So it just it doesn't make sense to spend money on something we can't even put on the DVD. So we just choose to not use TNA talent. In like the Dragon Gate case, I think that was more of a last minute thing for the live crowd because of the fact that you know the deal didn't go through to get the Japanese guys in. So I mean they sold expensive tickets to all these people in New Orleans who thought they were going to get Japanese guys, so to make it up to those fans, they spent the extra money, so they added something more for the live crowd, even though they couldn't put on the DVD. They still, you know, the people that bought those tickets still, you know, got some quality matches out of people, whether they could be on the iPay-per-view or not. So,
would there be any TNA girls that you wouldn't mind bringing in if the money was right?
To be honest, I don't watch TNA to know who's there right now. Like, I'm just honest. I don't watch much wrestling on TV at all, and the little bit that I do, it's like if something cool happens on WWE and someone tells me about it, then I'll watch that segment or that show or whatever. But I have not watched TNA in years to even know who's there. I mean, like, we used Madison Rayne for a long time before she even got a TNA deal. She was one of the first tag team champions in Shimmer with Nevaeh. So she would always be someone who, if she was available to us, I'd work back into the mix. Who else is even there?
Gail Kim.
Yeah, I mean, Gail Kim's good. She was available and the price was reasonable, you know, I'd certainly, you know, try Gail Kim.
You could work a deal where you can get her husband to come cater the event as well.
Tremendous. We could always get a Victoria has her restaurant in Chicago and her husband is the head chef, so
there you go.
We could have a chef duel between two husbands of female pro wrestlers.
Did you see Paige on Monday?
I haven't. I've seen very little of what they've done with her. Like, I was at the Squared Circle yesterday, actually, as they were on the TV screens. They were playing a promo, which I guess was probably part of the NXT show this week or whatever, just doing a promo. But I haven't actually seen the footage of her winning the title or anything like that. But awesome for her. Like, she certainly deserves it, and she's one of those who, like, I mean, I'm not saying she shouldn't be on TV right now because she's absolutely ready, like more ready than 99% of those girls that they just rush onto television. Yes. But give her like another year or two, and her wrestling in combination with just like she can cut promos, she's got great charisma, she will be awesome in 2 years.
Yes,
she's great right now, but she's going to be so much better. Like, she's only 22, maybe. Something like that. Like, she started wrestling when she was 16 years old. Because it's a wrestling family. Both of her parents are wrestlers. Her brother's a wrestler. So she was, like, bumping in rings when she was probably 6 years old or whatever. because the family was running indie shows. So,
speaking of her mom, Soraya Knight, I have to ask you a question. The first Shimmer show I ever went to was the one last year in New York. And before and after her match, she basically walked to the ring, ended up stopping and staring at me and literally just scaring the living shit out of me. And then I hear her do this interview with Brian Alvarez, and she sounded like the sweetest, nicest old lady ever.
That's why they call her Sweet Soraya, because she's actually a nice person. No, I don't. she's awesome. Like, she's great at performing the character that she's supposed to portray, but in reality, she's a good team player and a very nice person. Maybe that shatters the gimmick, but it's true. and she's done a lot for women's wrestling in Europe. She runs her own women's shows there, in addition to her family continuing to run, shows with men's wrestling and everything, too. The women's shows are called Bellatrix, and the men's shows are WAW, the World Association of Wrestling. But they've been doing it for, she's been wrestling for 20 years. And her husband, who just retired last year, has been doing it for, was doing it for, like, probably 30 or so. She's so different from anything that you see in women's wrestling anywhere that, like, you saw it firsthand. She's a great heel and was the great villain to take the title away from the big babyface cheerleader Melissa at the time. So I hope that, and Grant, I don't expect them to do it just because I know at WWE, they want the young talent and everything. But, like, how do you – if they know that she's out there. They know they've got Paige, who obviously they have big plans for. And there's a limited time now where they could potentially be booking mother and daughter to either be teaming with each other or feuding with each other or a little bit of both in, as part of a story. It's – they got to do it. Like, who gives a shit how old Soraya Knight is? It's an opportunity to do a mother-daughter thing, which they've never done. Like, there hasn't been much of an opportunity anywhere in wrestling to do that since, like, Debbie Combs and her mom. Like, and that wasn't anything WWE ever did. They did do a little bit of the mother-daughter tag team, like, Wrestling at the Chase. I remember some tag matches that they did, but fuck. That would be some great TV. And Soraya can still work. She's obviously a great promo. Fuck, they need to do that. They're fools if they don't.
Yeah, hopefully they'll do they could do like a whole year program. Have them, team and then
awesome.
Turn and then it'd be awesome.
That's what we ended up doing. Like, we had to rush it in Shimmer just because she got signed, and it was kind of like we had them teaming for a while at first. And they had only been on two sets of shows. It might have only been one set of four shows where they were a tag team, and then I believe Brittany got signed, Paige got signed, and I had originally thought that we weren't even going to have her available for our shows later in the year. So, but then at the last minute, like, for whatever reason, the paperwork wasn't getting finalized, and they were going to let her, if she wanted to, she could work our shows. So, like, at the last minute, we added her to the shows, and we're like, all right, well, how do we finish this up? I mean, we have to rush it, but you have Brittany Knight turn babyface and feud with Soraya Knight and do a big building-wide brawl, mother versus daughter. So we did it. We had to have that all, like, in a compact little eight-show story of them being a team through having a falling out and having her final match, but, like, WWE could do that on a much grander scale. And hopefully they're able to see the light and actually make that decision and do it.
Yeah. One thing I noticed about the two of them is that they're both really good at their, their verbiage during the matches.
Yeah, they're good heels. It comes with, ring time. And granted, she's really young, but, like, she learned working those shows in front of those British crowds and everything. So she knows how to – Paige. She learned how to get heat as a heel working these shows for her family. So, it's almost like second nature. What it takes years for any of these, like – really athletic model types that come from other backgrounds other than pro wrestling that they teach wrestling to. It takes years for them to learn how to actually, like, work a crowd and structure a match. But Paige was doing that, you know, during her teenage years. And even though she's, you know, 21 or 22, whatever she is now, she's a veteran at this point. So she knows what she's doing. And that's exactly what WWE wants. They want young talent who are competent, and they know they're going to get a good, like, 8 to 10 year run out of. And I just think with a little bit more experience, she's going to be a huge star for them. Because she's a better in-ring wrestler than most yeah. they've got there. Like, maybe Natty would be the only one that would be able to hang with her.
How's it going, Craig?
Another question from Charles, and this is a hardcore question if I've ever read one. Thoughts on the working arrangement with the Joshi for Hope, and how did that come about?
Okay, so for people who don't understand, which is the vast majority of anyone listening to this, Joshi for Hope is a booking office in Japan, but they also run their own shows. It's kind of like how would I put it? Okay, there was a wrestler who worked for Arcyon back in the day, Mariko Yoshida. I keep using back in the day, but at least this was in reference to like 2000, so at least it's more than 10 years ago. She worked for Arcyon, and eventually when that promotion dissolved, she formed her own wrestling school, and they would run shows with her, like, headlining the main events and then her students on the undercard, and that was called Ibuki. And it was the company was owned by the Esovation Company in Japan. Hashiro Suzuki is the president of that. And they did about 15 Ibuki shows, you know, maybe 3 shows a year, something like that. And that gave a start to many of the wrestlers who we eventually started bringing into Shimmer in 2010. But they were young girls working on these Ibuki shows in, like, 2008, 2009. In early 2010. So that was like Hiroyo Matsumoto, Misaki Ohada, Tomoka Nakagawa to an extent, but she got her start with, she was trained by Taka Michinoku and did Kai and Tai Dojo stuff first. But anyway, I would send DVDs of the Shimmer stuff to their office just for the fuck of it, just because I was like, well, it would help if what we're doing in America is at least seen by some people in Japan, even if they toss the DVDs in the garbage, who cares? So I would send DVDs blindly to the Esovation office. And I don't know how much Yoshida actually watched of it or if it was just Hashi taking the DVDs for himself, but they knew who we were. And a guy named Matt Nordstrom, who I believe was doing like the 01 website in English, like back in, I remember him on MySpace, to put everything in perspective. He was on MySpace as like the webmaster for 01's English website back when like Steve Corino was the head booker of 01, bringing Americans over there. And he's friends with all of the Esovation people. And he just asked me out of the blue in like March of 2010, If some of Yoshida's students are in the United States, would you be willing to use them on your shows next month? And I'm like, of course. I've been sending them DVDs forever. So that was essentially the deal. Like they wanted to do an American tour and come here, I mean, vacation. They'd never wrestled in the United States before, so they scheduled to wrestle for us, and also they did Jersey All Pro, like, the week after. And I arranged for them to train at the Ring of Honor school during the middle of the week just to help make some more connections or whatever. So that's what they did. And they, you know, had outstanding matches against our girls. Nakagawa and Ayumi Kurihara had put them in a semi-main event spot just to see, because they had, like, a feud in Japan. So it was like, all right, well, these are the two to put together. Go out there and wrestle it like a main event. And they... I mean, unbelievable match, so we had to bring them back. So we just kept bringing them back, and they've been on every show. Though the lineup of which girls would come over has changed from weekend to weekend, but ever since April 2010, we have always brought a group of between 3 and 5 female wrestlers from Japan booked through the Joshi for Hope office. Eventually, like, they stopped doing the Ibuki shows and changed the name to Joshi for Hope. But it's still the same. Hashi is the, like, the talent booker for them, and we have an agreement with him. And it's led to us having some of the best Japanese wrestlers to come over. Rayan Leon from JWP, great tag team, High Flyers and everything. They just came back for us this past weekend. Yumi Oka from Wave. Ryo Mizunami has come over through them. So it's been very beneficial, like, that, you know, they have the opportunity to wrestle here. I mean, it's only a couple times a year, but, you know, they get their name out there in another part of the world. They get the footage of their matches from here that they can then take and release on DVD in Japan to sell to the, you know, it's another piece of merchandise for their gimmick table at the shows at Cork and Hall or whatever. So it's been a very beneficial relationship for us, and they put the deal together to get Sheeta here, because she was one of the wrestlers I really wanted to bring in, but she wasn't necessarily part of the Sovation crew of girls, but, you know, how she cut the deal with her, and now Sheeta's a part of the shows too. So it's a working agreement, and I would hope that eventually it's going to lead to perhaps a Shimmer show in Japan at some point. I mean, right. The logistics would have to be worked out, but, like, you know, it's through them working over here, a lot of the fans in Japan have realized that those girls are coming over here and, you know, they're watching the stuff on DVD. So if we were to do a show there, even if it's a small, you know, small independent level thing that's going to draw 300 people, we might as well try to give it a shot at some point if it makes financial sense. But, you know, like anything in wrestling, there's, you know, we help them out, they help us out, and everyone benefits.
Yeah, and some of them are good. What's, I'm not sure how to totally pronounce the name, but Kelly Skater's partner?
Nakagawa.
Nakagawa, to me, is like one of the greatest little baby faces I've ever seen.
And the thing is, she was like one of the greatest little heels up until about a year ago. Like, the first 3 years that she was on our show, she was a heel that was just like she's so small and everything, but she would, like, do everything imaginable to cheat, like taking off, you know, the thing around her waist and choking people. She'd have that water bottle, and she would spit it in people's eyes when the referee's back's turned, whatever. Like, she was, like, the biggest little cheater ever, and everybody fucking hated her. But then, like, slowly, like, she started teaming with Kelly Skater, who was starting to turn babyface herself, and they turned themselves into probably the two most over babyfaces we have right now. They're the tag team champions right now, and though it's not something that you see very often these days in wrestling anywhere, really, we have the tag team champions headlining at least half of the shows that we do, if not a little bit more than the singles title is headlining the shows, just because they're super over baby faces and the singles champions a heel. I think that tag team wrestling is a forgotten part of 2014 mm-hmm. pro wrestling by a lot of people. I guess the one company mm-hmm. that probably doesn't consider tag wrestling as secondary would be Chikara, just because Quack's such a huge yeah. fan of tag team wrestling. But, you know, it's, in my opinion, it should be equally, both of the titles should be equally presented yeah. as important, whether it's singles or yeah. tag, and they're awesome.
You know what my dream match for San Francisco would be, if you guys were to show, would be to have Kelly and her partner, the Shimmer Tag Team Champions, versus the Lucha Sisters, the Shine Tag Team.
That would be an interesting match. Yes, that would be an interesting match. I know that, you're that a huge, huge fan of both Leva and Mia Yim. So.
Oh yeah,
that brings up a question from Charles. He says, "As a fan, talking to you, is there a dream match that you want to see
that I could put on one of my shows, or just in general in wrestling in general?
How about one of each?"
I don't know. It's very difficult, and I hate any time there's an interview with someone and they don't have an answer. So I'm trying to come up with something off the top of my head. It'd be awesome if to have Sarah Del Rey back, even for a brief run. I mean, that would mean that she would get fired from WWE. And I certainly don't want that to happen. But if for whatever reason WWE, okay, we'll put it this way. Here's my dream scenario. WWE lets Sarah still do wrestling shows while employing her as a trainer at the Performance Center. I would like to eventually get to the point where we could have Sarah back on like a weekend of shows where she could wrestle all the new girls that have become stars in the time since she's been employed by WWE, because Sarah's fucking awesome. And there's a lot of girls who, you know, I would love to see what a match, like, I'd love to see Del Rey versus Sheeta. I'd love to see 2014 Mia Yim versus Sarah Del Rey. They wrestled each other, but it was, like, during Mia Yim's first 6 months after graduating wrestling school. So, like, it's a completely different wrestler now.
Right.
That would be a dream scenario. I'd like, if we can get Io Shirai to come in, I'd like to do Io Shirai and Athena. There's a lot. There's a whole lot. The Shirai sisters versus 3G in tags. And in wrestling in general, I don't know. I kind of said it before, but I don't really watch too much current wrestling other than what I need to be paying attention to keep running my business. But that's probably horrible, because you should be watching all products so that you understand the industry and what's popular and what's not popular. But, oh well, I don't watch a lot of wrestling. I don't know. I mean, those are some things off the top of my head which aren't very interesting unless you're a huge women's wrestling fan.
Right,
and I don't think anyone's listening to this podcast who isn't a women's wrestling fan at this point, because...
Sure.
This is a horrible interview, and I apologize.
we've had worse.
in the last
Craig,
weeks,
Craig didn't help the last Trina Michaels interview at all, but...
Oh, please. She wouldn't answer anything.
Wouldn't answer your question. She answered all of mine.
Jeez. Yes, mine were personal.
One question I want to get to before I forget is, last year after the Mania shows, Allison Danger retired.
Yes.
And it was kind of like a secret why, and then it turned out she had a medical condition and she was back at the shows this week. How's she doing, by the way?
I mean, she's doing okay. She's still retired. she ended up – what happened was she had a stroke in early 2013.
Wow.
And they kind of told her her condition, they found lesions on her brain. Her condition is not life-threatening, but it was like, you can't be a pro wrestler anymore. So what we did was we had a final weekend where she was in all tag team matches with Leva. And I honestly don't think she took a single bump in any of those matches, but, you know, she couldn't. We did a story to finish her up so that she could have one last match. And we used that match as the way that we turned our babyface champion heel by, like, what we did was, quick backstory for people who don't know. Back in 2008, I believe, cheerleader Melissa, broke Danger's collarbone with the air raid crash. And that put Danger out of action for, you know, 8 months or whatever the hell it was. So what we ended up doing was they were opponents in Danger's retirement match. It was kind of like Danger wanted to wrestle Hamada in her last match, but she knows that she can't have a good singles match with Hamada because of her physical condition. So she wanted to do a tag, have Leva at her side, and told Hamada, you select your partner, and Hamada selected Melissa. So halfway through that match, Danger's collarbone, which had been broken, the injury was reaggravated, asked for some, like, a little bit of a timeout, and Melissa, you know, was like, timeout, stop complaining about injuries from 5 years ago. And, you know, it got heated, they started brawling, Melissa started working over her collarbone for the next few minutes, Fujiwara armbar forces Danger to tap out in a retirement match. Bell rings, Melissa still has the armbar on, still has it, referee's trying to make a break, still has the Fujiwara armbar. So Hamada confronts Melissa, you know, what are you doing, are you crazy? She slaps Hamada, gives Hamada the air raid crash, walks out. So not only do we have the significant moment of Danger's retirement match, we also have the champion turning heel, which was necessary at the time. Big turning point for the story of Melissa, because she was babyface for, you know, 7.5 years or whatever. So it was very important match in the overall scheme of things for Shimmer. But that was, you know, that was Danger's farewell. We had the referee reverse the decision because Melissa wouldn't release the hold after the bell, so Danger still won her retirement match by disqualification. Gave a farewell speech and moved herself into a position where she's now, I mean, she's still a part of the Shimmer shows as a, you know, as an agent in the locker room and everything, helping the young girls structure their matches, still on the booking committee. Did a little bit of commentary this past weekend at the shows. So she's still a big part of what we're doing, but she doesn't have to bump another day in her life. So.
Didn't you guys tease a comeback for her or something?
No.
Maybe not. Didn't one of the teams just start beating the shit out of Leva and Danger wanted to help her?
Okay, probably what you're thinking of. There was, like, on the next set of shows after she retired, we had, like, Melissa's first title defense after that tag match where she turned heel was against Leva, who was out, you know, for revenge for what she did to Danger. And, like, Melissa retains the title in that match and keeps attacking Leva after the match is over with, just to be a dickhead. And so, like, Danger came in to make the save, and then she went to attack Danger too, and then Lufisto ran her off and saved Danger. So it was like Danger was in the ring in jeopardy of being, you know, put in the hospital by Melissa again or whatever. But it didn't lead to another. It led to the Lufisto versus Melissa feud. Because Lufisto came out and was like, because anyone that knows Lufisto's history, she had a stroke like 3 years ago and was able to come back from it and continue wrestling. So it's like you're attacking someone who had to retire because they had a stroke. Like, what the fuck? So that was what led to the feud between Melissa and Lufisto that built up to that New Orleans show.
Oh, I thought I had read a report on one of the shows from last weekend where she was, like, doing commentary and wanted to, like, interfere, but, like, they held her back or something.
I think it was probably something along the lines of she was trying to hit the ring to make the save on somebody, but they held her back from doing so because she got attacked by Melissa last time. I'm not sure exactly what the – she's not wrestling again. We'll put it that way. She's done. Like, retire. That's one retirement that is going to stick because she can't physically get in the ring again. Like – it's just a fact. I know in wrestling, retirements mean nothing thanks to the Terry Funk and shit like that, but but when you can't, like, when you legitimately can never wrestle again because of a physical condition, that's it. That's it. So she's kind of like, she worked herself into the on-camera role of kind of like the, not general manager, but like kind of a authority figure kind of thing. Up until this point, we've had like, the senior official always is the one that either grants title shots or makes matches or whatever, Bryce Remsburg. But he wasn't there this weekend, so we're like, all right, Danger is now the on-camera matchmaker kind of thing. So that's kind of her role at this point.
Yeah, and now speaking of other people who help out, I know Portia does commentary, and I haven't seen a whole lot, but what I have seen of her, she's actually extremely funny. And that come about? How did that just was an accident that you discovered she was like an awesome commentator, or how did that?
She's okay. Originally, Allison Danger was the color commentator, like probably up until 2009. Like, eventually, Danger has a daughter who I believe is 5 years old now, so I guess do the math. When she got pregnant, she couldn't travel to come do commentary. We would do the commentary in post-production. So, like, she just couldn't get – they would require leaving home and leaving her family. I mean, not only just when she was pregnant she couldn't travel, but, like, right after giving birth, she couldn't just up and leave for 4 days to go to Florida and record commentary on 4 DVDs. So just out of necessity, we needed to find someone else that could take that spot. And Portia Perez asked for the spot. And, you know, just having conversations with her, she's a big wrestling fan / historian. She's always done good promos, so she's well-spoken. She gets, like, she's got a great mind for booking, which is why she's, you know, a big part of writing the storylines. for these shows. She's, I mean, I've always compared her to, like, an Eddie Gilbert type or a Paul Heyman type, where, like, they're great at several different aspects of pro wrestling. She might not be the most athletic, like, she's not a very athletic person. I mean, she's still a good wrestler, but, like, her strength is in working the crowd as a heel, getting heat, you know, the methods of cheating behind the referee's back and everything. That is her strength. She can cut a good promo, and she's got great ideas. So, like, you utilize someone like that, you have to tap into their potential for everything. So I knew that, like, we needed a color commentator, and she was very well spoken, was into it. She could get the time off from her regular life to record four DVDs over the span of 4 or 5 days in Florida. And she worked very well. Like, I think that even if WWE might not ever hire her as a wrestler, I mean, they're probably never going to hire a female commentator either, but she would be a perfect candidate for that job. Like, again, I don't watch much TV, but, like, the female interviewer they've got, Renee Young, is really good. Yeah. So hopefully, like, that the fact that they have found a woman who can do a very good job as a broadcaster or interviewer or whatever in wrestling, hopefully that opens up their eyes to the potential of hiring another, because Portia Perez is someone who definitely deserves a job somewhere. And whether it's, if it's not as a wrestler, it's as a talker or as an idea person from a booking standpoint. Because she comes, like, her ideas from a booking, like, I barely consider myself a part of the fucking booking committee at this point, because I go to so many other people who have better ideas than I do, and I just want to put on the best shows that we can. So if someone else comes up with a fantastic idea, we're going to do it, because I just want to put together the best shows that we can. And she is a very important part of the whole process.
Regarding my dream match that I mentioned a few minutes ago, the wheels are in motion, because Kelly Skater is taking Madison Eagle's place, teaming with Evie against the Lucha Sisters. So.
Well, there you go. But Evie is no Tomoka Nakagawa. I hate to say it. Evie's really good. Evie's really fucking good.
She did have my favorite match of the show 2 weeks ago.
What? Okay, on that show, what was your favorite match on the show overall? And don't just say Leva's match. Don't just say Leva's match because you fucking love Leva. Like, over all favoritism aside, what was your favorite match on the show?
That Evie match.
It was Evie and Shida?
Okay. Yes.
All right. I would probably agree with you if I was evaluating the show overall. That was supposed to be Mia Yim versus Shida, but Yim got hurt. So we were like, all right, well, we'll do Yim and Shida and Berwyn next weekend. And in the meantime, who's the best candidate to work Shida? And Evie was the answer. She's from Auckland, New Zealand, has just got done with her first Japan tour and was training there for like 2 months. So she was fully prepared for that opportunity, and they tore it up.
Now, with that said, Leva Bates did have an awesome squad.
Yes, she did. Her and Veda Scott had an excellent second match on the card or whatever it was.
And I'm ready to get the DVDs when they do come out, because they continued the story. It was like a four-match story.
Yes. Yeah, because they were partners, babyface opponents in New Orleans, and they formed a tag team in Berwyn, which quickly did not work out very well. And Veda Scott is now very hated in the Berwyn Eagles Club.
Yeah. Now, we do have to talk a little bit about other stuff other than women's wrestling, and my first question is going
to
be...
I think it's too late to win the fucking fans back into listening to the podcast. I think they've already given up on it by this point. But I'll continue speaking anyway about other things that might have interested people that have since quit listening because they hate women's wrestling. And
well, my first question is, how bad were your feelings hurt when Craig did a review of the CM Punk DVD and claimed you were not on it?
I don't know. Whatever.
Slightly.
I was barely on it. And the part that I was on, I certainly didn't sound like myself.
Thank you.
It was because the one little part that I was on, like the sound bite anyway, it was like from the 93-minute match that Hero and Punk had at IWA Mid-South. And I think that I just almost sounded like that right now, and my voice kind of cracked. Like, if I'm doing commentary loudly for fucking... at that point in the time, it was probably like 2 hours and 45 minutes of total showtime. Like, it was right after... The clip that they played my voice of was probably right after we announced that 90 minutes had elapsed and they were going into an overtime. So I sounded like this for over 90 minutes! These guys have been battling! Who's going to pull out the win? So I sounded like an 8-year-old child trying to do commentary. Which was they did an advanced screening, I guess, of the documentary at a theater in Chicago. And when I saw Punk there, he's like, how about that clip of you doing commentary? I'm like, yeah, thanks. It's really going to help me out. The one time I'm on a WWE release doing commentary, I sound like a fucking child. But whatever. At least I'm on there, right?
In my defense.
I don't know how well you know CM Punk personally, and of course I'm not expecting you to drop any kind of news or anything, but in your opinion, do you think CM Punk will be back in wrestling eventually, or do you think he might be done?
I will preface this with saying I have absolutely no inside information, and I have not talked to him in months. So I don't know the answer, so I can only speculate because I don't know the answer. I would say... just looking at it from a pro wrestling standpoint, that it goes back to what I started to say earlier in the show about featuring the young guys and trying to phase out the old guard. I would say the timing was very suspect with when he chose to leave, and because it happened, he walked out on Monday Night Raw the day after the pay-per-view, where the crowd turned on the promotion for not putting Daniel Bryan in the Rumble, right?
Yes.
Not featuring the young guys the way that they wanted the young guys to be featured, or the, you know. So what I suspect, and I could be completely wrong, again, I haven't talked to him, I have no inside information whatsoever. This is just a wrestling fan speaking who doesn't know any of these, doesn't talk to these people anymore. That much. I run into him like 2 times a year at fucking stuff in Chicago. If I were WWE after that Rumble happened where they booed the fuck out of Rey Mysterio when he was going to the ring, even though he was babyface, because as the last guy he wasn't Daniel Bryan entering the Rumble, which is what the fans wanted. They probably were like if you're WWE creative, they probably after that show were up until 3 o'clock in the morning trying to figure out, all right, what the fuck do we do now? Because we got Mania coming up. Here's what I'm hoping the scenario is, and maybe it is what's going to happen. Who knows? Maybe it's not. But if it were me, and this is counting on WWE to do logical things, I would say that, like, okay, so what do we need to do to give the audience what they want? They want to see Daniel Bryan. We have to position Daniel Bryan in a spot where, at least by Mania, he's the guy. But it seemed like the overall dissatisfaction with the product was the fact that those older guard guys were being featured instead of pushing the younger guys. Like, that's the overall... And I mean, it's not just Daniel Bryan that the audience wants to see. I think that they really, and maybe it's just me, but I think that, like, the majority of the audience would love to see guys like The Shield and Cesaro and, Bryan, Punk, et cetera, you know, guys in developmental that they could bring up. I'm trying to think who else. Like, Matt Sydal, or Evan Bourne, he's sitting in Florida, not even being used. I don't think he's still injured. They just decided they're not bringing him back up yet. But that's like a little high-flying guy that could be featured on television.
What's funny is they rolled his contract over for another year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully that means they do have plans to eventually do something with him. But my point is, like, there are guys in their system that they could, if they make the decision to feature them, could be the guys. If they just, like, make a transition from the old guard to the new guard. And what's the best way to do that? Okay, you give the fans the immediacy that they want, Daniel Bryan as the top guy, so you have him win the belt at WrestleMania. Makes sense? They actually did it. So if I were them, what I would do, and this is, they would have to have made the decision, okay, we're phasing out the older guys and we're going to go with a young crew going forward. If you have a, if you have like a 1-year plan where next year's WrestleMania, it is going to be the younger crew versus the older crew, and the younger crew prevails, what do you do to build next year's WrestleMania? You've got to have, it's got to be more than just Bryan, right? Like, Bryan is the leader of the thing. He overcame the odds. He's the, you know, he's the champion. The people are behind him. But you still have guys like Kane and the Big Show, et cetera, on the show. So you build to the younger guys being at odds with the older guys. But at some point, you've got to, you know, there have to be twists and turns along the way. So what I'm hoping for is, you know, if they can convince him to do it, I mean, maybe Punk's done with wrestling. I don't know. But I would think he still wants to make a little money, and it would make sense to do this creatively if they can talk him into it. Like somewhere around like maybe SummerSlam or something like that, when it looks like Bryan is like fighting a one man fight against all like the older crew and against the management or whatever. At the right time, Punk hits the ring to fucking stand at his side, and it's Punk and Bryan leading the younger crew against the older crew. Build that to WrestleMania next year, where Punk and Bryan and Cesaro and The Shield and whoever the fuck else all prevail, and those are like effectively the retirement matches of all these older guys. And then you go with a younger crew going forward. That's what I would do. I don't know if they're actually going to fucking do it, but that's what I would do.
Yeah, and I mean,
I'll make one more point before you say what you're going to say. The timing of it, that he left on the Raw the day after the office kind of realized this is not what the fans want. They want the younger guys. They want Bryan. It just seems, it's very suspect that he walked out 30 minutes before the broadcast went on the air. Like, it's got to, the logical thing from a booking standpoint, if I'm writing the show, is we somehow get rid of Punk so that when he does the run-in later in the year, it means more. It means a lot more if he's not a roster member for the next 6 months than if he was on the roster and he's already on the show in another match and happens to come to Bryan's aid. If he comes out of nowhere after being absent, then it really means something. So I'm hoping that's what happens. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. I know nothing. So whatever.
In some weird way, I mean, him walking out, whether it's a work or not, I mean, was the best thing for the company because, you know, I think Dave reported that Bryan was to wrestle Sheamus for like the third time at WrestleMania, and who was really looking forward to that? And then it just turned into basically everyone, well, not everyone, but basically all the smart fans. I mean, that's what they wanted. They actually
In 2014, is there really a separation? I mean, I guess there kind of is. Is there a separation between the overall WWE fan base and the internet wrestling community or whatever? Like, in 2014, everybody has the internet on their fucking phone. Everyone is on the internet. So, like, anyone who's a big enough wrestling fan found out through, you know, the Observer site or, you know, whatever sites they go to, found out that the plans were Bryan versus Sheamus. And they're like, what the fuck? So they rebelled against the show. I think that the days of talking about how the internet is a small minority or whatever are long past. Mm-hmm. Like, 90 seconds remaining. Are you about to no longer be live?
Yeah, well, we won't be live, but we'll still be recording.
I know. You need to get plugged in first.
I'll do that real quick. Everyone check out angrymarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at angrymarks.com, along with a lot of other shows. You can also download and stream our show at blogtalkradio.com/Cotrere and older shows at blogtalkradio.com/Edward-Laredo. You can follow me at Facebook at Edward Laredo, and you can follow me at Twitter at Ed in San Antonio.
See, I'm a professional.
And I'm
thank you for joining us. See, there you go.
And I'm gonna take my plug, and I'm going to give it to Dave. Dave, go ahead and plug all your stuff.
Proper Jam on Twitter. Fucking.
No, you're stuck.
fuck.
What do you got?
Okay,
you got,
now I forgot where I was going with my last stuff.
Yeah, where were you going? Try to reclaim your thoughts.
I was going to say, the reason why I think there still is a difference between internet fans and casual fans is because you're kind of behind the stage, but I'm actually sitting in the audience, and I have to listen and hear these idiots. And
they're saying they're not intelligent enough to work a smartphone and find out what's going on.
Well, they can work a smartphone, but that doesn't mean they know what's going on, because you hear the only complaint I have with wrestling is the wrestling fans, because
yes,
you know, people talk
true
about
story.
Why the advertising on Raw, they don't pay the same rights because of the audience. They actually have a point, because I've heard some idiotic people, and I'm sure Craig can agree with me.
Oh yeah,
you know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess maybe. I don't know. I whenever I hear the talk of how there's the internet wrestling fans and then the casual fans, I kind of roll my eyes. I'm like, everybody's on the internet. It's 2014. At least in comparison to, like, years past, there's not that much of a – I mean, maybe in year 2000, it was like 10% of the wrestling fans actually were online. But now it's fucking 95%. You know.
Dave, I saw a man after the Undertaker lost at WrestleMania. I saw him sit in stew for at least 10 to 12 minutes, and then during the main event got up and grabbed his girl, and they left the building.
Wow. Wrestling is serious business, brother.
It was still real to him, damn it.
Still real to
it
him.
Was still real.
Wow. Well, okay. I guess maybe I overestimate wrestling fans. I don't know. But
and just so update for everyone knows, the Lucha Sisters did just retain their Shine Tag Team title, so future title versus title match is still in hope.
It could potentially happen at some point in the future. Yes.
We
shall see. Where's Couture, by the way? He just he has nothing to talk about with a women's wrestling promoter.
Yeah,
right.
He's the highest in the interviews, but I think he's on. Couture, are you there? Do you have any questions you'd like to ask Dave?
I do not have any interviews. I just, if I don't have anything to say, I'm not interested in what you're talking about. I'm not going to ask a bunch of stupid questions. Saying that heck like I don't know. So,
well, we can talk about other things in wrestling other than women's wrestling. I mean, I do. Maybe I don't watch a lot on TV, but at least I've watched it over the years.
Couture would not get up and leave.
What do you think about the Ultimate Warrior? Let me ask you that.
I was a big Ultimate Warrior fan when I was, because, like, I was him for Halloween one year.
So was I.
Me too.
See, like, even though he wasn't a great worker, I didn't give a shit when I was in junior high. I painted my face and I shook the fucking ropes, and I loved the Warrior, man. Like, when he wrestled Haku on Saturday Night's Main Event, I'm like, fuck, Haku does not have what it takes to win the title. And he didn't, so. He didn't. Even though I was a Heenan family supporter, he still wasn't able to take that title away from the Warrior. Always believe. Yeah, that sucks. The whole, and I've seen a little bit of the footage that they filmed with him. I guess it's on the network, like him and his family during Mania weekend and everything. And I mean, it's been said a million times by everybody, but he did not look good. And given the promo that he gave on Raw, he has known that, like. I mean, I guess it's been declared just he had a massive heart attack, but, like, he had to have known something was up medically where he only had, like, a few more weeks. Because there's no other way that he would have known to cut that kind of a promo. But in the very least, it's a great thing that he was able to, you know, patch up his differences with Vince McMahon and everything and have one last, you know, presence on national wrestling programming that everybody could see and, you know, say a farewell, so that at least his final thing wasn't that self-destruction DVD, you know?
Well, his final thing might have been what they put out the other night, and if that's what it is, it's like a great ending, because this piece that they did, I don't exactly know exactly what it's the title. I think it's Warrior. The thing on the network?
Yeah,
the thing on the network is one of the most incredible things. The footage that they have footage of him and Hogan making peace. They have footage of him and Vince.
I didn't see the whole thing, but I saw, like, the tail end of that. They were showing it on the screens at the Squared Circle in Chicago last night. So, you got to wonder what that conversation with Hogan would have been like if there wasn't a cameraman there. But still.
Oh, that's true.
At least, like, the shots of him with his children and everything. It's just, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
He had to have known. But.
So, well, before we wrap up, Craig, any last questions?
Yeah, I was going to save the punk question that you had till the very end in case Dave.
I'm sorry that I let you all down by not having extensive conversations.
Yeah.
With him. The last time I saw him was when that DVD was released. No, I saw him one time since then, I think.
So
I don't remember.
I guess my last question would be. Since, you know, some of the guys that you, worked with in a barn, let's be honest, since some of
actually,
those guys
it was
have
a converted,
called up.
It was a converted auto mechanics shop, just for clarification.
Okay.
I know they called it a barn on his DVD, but, like, he knew there were fucking oil stains on the floor, and it was because it was a fucking mechanic shop. Behind some dude's house on a gravel road in Charlestown, Indiana. But anyway.
Tremendous. So since a lot of those guys have been called up or have been offered deals, did any of those guys come back and buy Dave Prazak a steak dinner?
Punk did buy me some meals a couple of years ago after he got signed. No steak dinner, but because I'm a vegetarian. But I guess it's because I'm a vegetarian, probably.
But
once he started making some money, he certainly paid for some meals.
I take it Ryan Ash never bought you a meal.
Ryan Ash absolutely never bought me a meal. He just pissed me off by doing that Kurt Angle fucking ripoff gimmick in front of 38 people in Rensselaer, Indiana.
Yes.
DVD that we titled Nobody's Here in Rensselaer, which is a small crowd. Because indie wrestling is serious business, and he disrespected everyone by making a mockery of things and acting like Kurt Angle.
Yeah, I have the unfortunate privilege of having to sit next to him at Raw after Mania.
So. Was he wearing a pink T-shirt with Team Viggity on it?
He wasn't not.
No, he wasn't wearing it. I actually have one, but he gave me a freaking large, like I'll ever be able to fit into it.
Well, that's encouragement to start doing the things that he has all of his clients doing, Ed.
Oh, my God.
You've lost some weight lately, right? Like in the past couple of years? Haven't you lost some weight? Am I missing
something? Yeah, I've actually gone from 6 to 2X. I'm down to 258 the last time I checked.
Tremendous.
And at one point, I was about 336.
Maybe at some point you'll fit into the large that he gave you.
Maybe.
Odds are strongly against this ever taking place, but hey, at least it's encouragement.
And my last question will be, because I hear she works out of Seattle. Do you have any plans of bringing Akiri Hokuto to Shimmer?
Shut up.
You mean star of... what the fuck was it called? Tulalip Championship Wrestling.
I'll help you with a joke. Yeah. You know, I do a lot of good stuff, but Ed always remembers the few mistakes that I make.
Hokuto and Hosaka, they both start with H-O.
Right.
The same Asian number of syllables.
Yeah.
So, it's an understandable mistake.
She actually worked like the last Shine pay-per-view, and she was actually awesome.
Yeah, she can still go. Yeah. But, like, okay, there's another similar story. Our Sal, who's the promoter of Shine, he's also been the producer of the Shimmer DVDs. When dropping in graphics and the lower third name graphics for people making their entrances, there was a show that Ayako Hamada was on, and when I was proofing the DVD, it said Malaya Hosaka.
There you go.
And so I had. I think that's equally horrible mistake as comparing Hosaka. Not that Malaya's not a bad wrestler, but I mean, let's be honest, Hokuto is much more.
Yeah.
Oh, who knew?
Malaya isn't married to Kensuke Sasaki, and yeah. There haven't been any Wrestling Observer matches of the year out of Malaya, but I believe Hokuto may have had one.
Has she been booked by Caden Matthews, though? So there you go.
Yeah. I mean, when Sasaki and their adopted child, what's his name, Nakajima, when they all wrestle for Tulalip, then maybe.
So, Dave, we really appreciate you staying on for so long.
No problem.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
For the two people still listening, hi, Charles Short. You listen to
it's
the whole
me
thing.
And Ed.
It's probably Dazza and Matt Clary. So if you want to throw shout out to them.
Oh, boy.
We have our hardcore.
Oh, speaking of which, I asked Dazza to ask some questions, and he sent me some, and I totally forgot. So let me just real quick. Do you have any plans, or have you thought of ending a feud with the hair match like they, you know, Toyota and her partner did way back in the day?
It would have to be a situation where, for some reason, one of the girls wants to shave their head, like... I don't know if it was Nikki Rox's decision or not. I think it maybe it wasn't, but, like, at the point where she lost that hair match in TNA, like, she had destroyed her hair with bleach and, like, turned it purple for the Roxy gimmick and everything. So, like, it actually was necessary to cut all of her hair off and let it grow back from scratch just so that
she looked great with a short hair, too.
I know, and so did Serena.
But
like, it would probably have to be a situation where somebody, for whatever reason, has destroyed their hair through horrible bleach jobs or something, and, like, I'm going to cut my hair off anyway. Should I lose it in the ring? Other than that, I'm not going to, like, ask somebody who doesn't want to cut their hair off. How about looking like Serena for the next year and a half? Like, unless they really want to do it, I'm not going to ask somebody to do it.
We do have a lot of fire redheaded girls that I'm sure that's not their real color, so maybe one day one of their hairs will get all screwed up. Like, Hawaii and I would actually be perfect.
Exactly.
I mean, if you mean already, if it was bald head, I mean, I really would take a shit in my pants. People would have been running.
Maybe the opportunity will present itself eventually. Who knows?
Cool, Dave. Like, once again, thanks, and we hope you have a good night, and all the best, and I will be ordering some DVDs.
Tremendous. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, no problem.
Thanks, Dave. The best.
Cool. Well, everybody, come back next week, and we will have something next week, and we'll let you know what's up before. So everybody, come back next week, and we'll talk to you then.
Be the man! You gotta beat the man!
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the Matrix shit! Let's go hook him up!
Says I just whipped your ass. You take it all away. I'm gonna drag you until I wear your Texas ass out.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.